Well, good morning. It's November 1st. And ISIS in Manhattan as Manafort arrested in D.C. In an incredible attack, an apparent lone wolf gunman claiming to be Muslim used a Home Depot truck to run over a number of innocent pedestrians walking and riding in New York's busiest bike zone. 8 dead, 15 injured as of right now on a Halloween attack. Saifullo Saipov, 29, leapt from the battered truck while screaming Allahu Akbar, while holding a paintball pistol in one hand and a pellet pistol in the other. He was approached by the police and shot in the stomach. He survived surgery after being rushed to the hospital and is now being questioned. So, dear friends, when will the next shoe drop? Well, have a great show for you this morning. And the first thing is this story about ISIS in Manhattan. So let's get into that a little bit more. Now, they have videos showing this 29-year-old Uzbeki national waving a fake gun in the middle of a highway before being shot in the stomach by New York Police Department officers. And so he went to Home Depot and got this truck. His full name, Saifullo Habibulavik Saipov, went and drove down a mile down the busiest bike path in the city. Now, how did he get to the United States? He came in 2010. He lived in Ohio and Florida and is currently a resident of New Jersey. He has a couple of trucking companies under his name. Some people described him as friendly and good with kids, but others who saw him come to the local market said he was one of the rudest people they'd ever met. Anyway, he mounted the West Side Highway bike path at 3:05 p.m. on Tuesday, Houston Street. He continued southbound for 17 blocks. He mowed down pedestrians, runners, and cyclists. Only when he crashed into a school bus at Chambers Street did he stop. Two kids inside there were hurt. One critically. He then gets out with his two fake guns. He throws down ISIS flags and notes. And the cops shoot him in the stomach. Which is good because he's alive. And now that they can find out how he was radicalized. So he was this Uzbekistan native. And he was also had become an Uber driver over here. And you probably are wondering, how did this guy get into the country? And that was from the Daily Mail UK, by the way. Well, I've got it from WABC New York, stating that authorities claim he came to the United States 7 years ago from Uzbekistan under what is called the Diversity Visa Program, which offers a lottery for people from countries with few immigrants to America. He didn't fly over on an Air Force or sail over on a ship sponsored by ISIS. We let him through the front door. Now, I'm going to read to you where 1.83 million green card Muslims have come from. Well, actually, I'm not going to. I'm just going to read from you the biggest countries. Pakistan, 237,000. From there, Afghanistan, 48,000. Malaysia, 33,000. Morocco, 63,000. Bangladesh, 178,000. Egypt, 123,000. Turkey, 61,000. Uzbekistan, 59,000. Yemen, 40,000. Lebanon, 54,000. Indonesia, 44,000. The Sudan, 45,000. Syria, 42,000. All right, Somalia, 89,000. So you're starting to get a feel. They've brought a lot of these people in to the country, and they're letting them come in through a lottery system. So they're not vetting these people like normal. Now, that doesn't also include the 155,000 foreign students from these same countries, and we have admitted over 59,000 legal permanent residents from Uzbekistan since 2001. So the question is, obviously, How are we going to stop these attacks? Now, some people are going to tell you that you can't stop the attacks. My response is we can, we just have to figure out how to do it. And if that means, I want to ask you a question here, if that means that we go and we interview every one of these people that have we have brought over from the Middle East to see if they've been radicalized and to figure out where they're coming from, would that be the right thing to do? I'm asking you, but if not, are we just going to sit around and wait for attack upon attack upon attack? These people are killing for God. I've asked this before on the show on AM Las Cruces. What are they hoping to gain? How does God benefit by random people being killed? Now, here's one of the most interesting things about this, these kind of attacks, is quite easily these people getting run over could be Muslim themselves, right? So, you know, what's the story there? What kind of a religion allows you to run over members of your own faith or shoot or blow up as long as you get the enemy? I just think that it's something that we need to discuss and stop pretending that there's nothing that we can do about it. And pretending that everything is fine, because it's obviously not. All right, so I wanted to get into the Paul Manafort story. He was indicted. He was indicted. And I do apologize for missing the show, but I got sick last night. And so I wanted to cover this in the morning, but it's recent enough. Now, as I said before, I had this theory in the last show, my conspiracy theory. The reason that Mueller indicted him is because the clock started to tick behind him. Mueller was starting to be on the verge of being kicked out of his position. He was on the verge of getting involved in another scandal, in which we look into what happened with the uranium. So he pulled the trigger, and I think he pulled the trigger. I think that he was always had this. He always knew that Paul Manafort had a little dirt in his international dealings. And they say that Paul Manafort is worth some incredible amount of money, like $165 million, something like that. All right. So when they unsealed the indictment on Monday, Paul Manafort and his business associate, a much younger guy named Rick Gates — Paul is around 70, Rick Gates I think is around 35 or 40. Manafort, turns out, is looking at possibly 80 years in prison. That's a review of the federal charges and relevant statutes that was gathered by the Associated Press, and I'm reading this out of the Denver Post right now. So Gates, his former business partner, could be looking at 70 years. They could still file additional charges against the pair, but, you know, we really don't know how strong this case is, but some of the people that have looked at it have said it's really, you know, it's actually a law that has been on the books since around 1930, and has only been prosecuted 7 times and has only had 1 conviction. So they knew that Paul Manafort was doing this, is breaking this law. Now, the law is called FASA, and it is the Foreign, I'm trying to remember what it stands for, Foreign Agents, it's not FASA, it's FARA, Foreign Agents Registry Act. And apparently he didn't follow all these rules in here, but neither did, believe it or not, John Podesta, who is the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton. And Paul Manafort was working for him, and now we don't know if the Podesta is going to be named in this prosecution. But his brother, John Podesta and Tony Podesta, his brother Tony, has already dropped out of the firm. So he quit because the heat was too hot. Now, Prosecutors are alleging that Manafort and Gates worked as unregistered agents of the government of Ukraine and the Party of Regions. Excuse me. A pro-Russian political party led by Viktor Yanukovych. And while serving as president of the former Soviet Republic from 2010 to 2014, Yanukovych was close to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, the indictment claims $75 million flowed through overseas accounts controlled by two Americans. Now, Manafort laundered supposedly $18 million to buy property and goods in the United States, and Gates got $3 million. Here's a summary of the 31-page indictment and potential penalties. Count one, conspiracy against the United States, and supposedly both men conspired together with others to knowingly and intentionally defraud and commit crimes against the United States between 2006 and 2017. If found guilty of this count, each would face 5 years in prison and 10,000 in fines. Count two, conspiracy to launder money. Both men charged with conspiring to take funds from a foreign country and place inside the United States without paying taxes. Penalties could include up to 20 years in federal prison and $500,000. Counts 3 through 6, failure to file reports for foreign bank and financial accounts. And the indictment claims between 2012 and 2015, Manafort failed to disclose the U.S. Treasury Department that he had a financial interest and authority over bank accounts in a foreign country involving more than $10,000. That could be 10 years in federal prison for four counts each and fines of up to $100,000 or 50% of the total value for the transactions for each of the 4 years encompassed. Count 7 through 9, failure to file reports of foreign bank and financial accounts. Similar, and those would be 10 years for each of the four counts. Count 10, unregistered agent of a foreign principal, that was FASA. And these prosecutors claim that these men failed to register with the FASA law. And as foreign agents of the government of Ukraine, parts of Regents in Yanukovych between 2008 and 2014, penalties for that, 5 years in federal prison, 10,000 in fines. Count 11, false and misleading statements under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, that is FASA. Count 12, false statements overall. So that's what you're looking at. And the fact of the matter is that this doesn't have anything to do with any kind of collusion. Now, the collusion, the claim of collusion is a very vague charge. What does it mean to collude? Who would you collude with? And I'm not saying that it would be ideal to collude to overthrow an election, but I'm saying that that never happened. That never happened as far as I can tell, but they're still going after Trump. So what do you think? I mean, how should this be treated? Do you really think it's fair to go after this guy for things that he did before he even knew or became friends with Trump? I mean, is that really fair? Now, they're using these charges, this possible 80 years over Paul Manafort, to squeeze him and even possibly make up things about Trump. But the obvious goal here is to catch and impeach Trump. I think it's outrageous. I think that what Robert Mueller is doing in and of itself is illegal. It's immoral. It's unethical. It is an absolute assault against the democracy. Trump was fairly elected. Now let's let him run the country for a while and see how he does. But he's been attacked repeatedly. Attacked and we've all seen it. We've all seen how he's been treated, and whether you like him or not, it's pretty sad that they feel like that the only way that they can deal with this is to deal with their disappointment. Now you've got an investigation that is supposed to look into collusion with Russia. The charges against Paul Manafort have nothing to do with the collusion with Russia to help the campaign, to overthrow the campaign. Everybody knows that. So why are they doing it? Oh, I think what they need to do is get rid of the special counsel law. Just get rid of it, because it's used to go after people for to even political scores. That happened with Clinton, and you might think that Clinton's a bad person and deserve it, and maybe he did deserve it. But the fact of the matter is that they didn't catch him doing what they claimed. He ended up lying about an affair that he had with a young woman, put the country through a lot of turmoil, but the purpose of that particular prosecution was not to catch him with young women. It was to deal with Whitewater and other things. So, and it blew up, and it burned him, and it kind of ruined his presidency in, you know, looking back. But all right, so what can be done? Now, the Wall Street Journal says what you could do is have the president pardon everybody in this probe preemptively, and then kind of ride it out, then get, you know, close the council down. Other people have saying the purpose of the council is so far outside of what it was meant to be doing in this case. You know, it is fascinating to watch this. Now you see why Trump was so upset at Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, because this was bound to happen. But whether you think it's okay or not is just based on which side of the partner you're at. But right now I want to point out to you that in the midst of trying to get rid of Donald Trump, we have got some great news. The economy is as strong as it's been in 10 years. Now, you recall how Obama presented that Obama kind of acted like the economy couldn't grow anymore, in the same way that he said, you know, we can't drill our way out, we're out of oil, was the direct claim. So, you know, I don't know. It's a little bit crazy, but we've got an economy that's doing pretty well, and there's a lot of things. You know, the stock market has never been higher. You might say, well, what difference does that make? I think it makes a lot of difference, because it gives people the sense that the country is thriving and people aren't afraid to invest anymore. But still, we lost 10 years of economic growth, and on top of that, we lost vast amounts of resources that had to be spent during the Great Recession. So it's time to move on from that. Now, speaking of which, I do have a little New Mexico story. Associated Press is reporting New Mexico County buries bodies of 19 unknown people, and it's right here in Little Doñana. New Mexico County, located on the U.S.-Mexican border, has buried the bodies of more than a dozen unnamed people. KVIA-TV in El Paso reporting burials took place at a special ceremony last week. And this was from yesterday, after no family came to claim the bodies with Doñana County. No family members spoke to honor the memory of any of the 19 bodies, but the event did attract dozens who gathered to silently mourn the unknown. Officials say the county plans to set up a marker at a burial spot to identify the people laid to rest in case family members do come forward. So that's kind of sad, isn't it? Now, going on to other stories, my friends. All right, so the sex assaults, and you've got to admit this story of all of these sexual you know, the assaults and the pressuring and the harassment, it's just growing by leaps and bounds. And now we found out what I had, you know, predicted, is that Kevin Spacey's program was canceled. And so got a very strange story about Weinstein, Harvey Weinstein. But first, let's see, which one do I want to tell you about first? Let me tell you about Weinstein first because it's so bizarre. Harvey Weinstein has been totally discredited. There have been something like 100 to 200 women who've come forward and told the same story with slight variations. He came on to me. He kissed me. He pushed me down on the bed. He pleasured himself in front of me. He said, if you want a role in this movie, we need to have sex. If not, then you can just forget a career. So now Weinstein, who's been totally discredited, is telling what few friends he has left that the scandal happened so he could change the world. This guy thinks he is Jesus. He thinks he's a Messiah. He's a savior. And that's just amazing how deluded he was. Now, here he says that he was born, he's telling people that he was born to take the fall for his behavior in order to change the world. He's resigned to his punishment as a martyr for social change. A representative for Weinstein commented, that's absurd. I don't know if it's absurd that he thinks that or that somebody said he thinks that. Now, 80 women have come forward so far to accuse him. And some have claimed to be rape victims. There's 82 of these women out there. The claims of sexual assault go back to the 1970s. Although he does deny any claim that he had, raped anyone. But what he's admitting to, I don't know. But so, I mean, is the guy nuts? And almost without fail, or I would say without fail with one exception, people who think they're saviors are crazy and end up being, you know, a lot of these people end up being perverts. Have you noticed that? A person who starts their own religion is invariably a pervert. I mean, that's one thing that you couldn't really say about Jesus, because Jesus was unmarried. He's never associated with any women, and he was focused on his ministry. But people who have come along and stated that they are here to save the world, like so many of these people, they turn out to be total perverts, and they just ruin everything for everybody else. So, now, Kevin Spacey has lost his TV show House of Cards. They shut it down, as I claimed they would. They'd have to. So, when he lost his show, his brother came out and told the craziest story, and this is from page 6. Kevin Spacey's brother says, our father abused us as children. Now, his father wasn't just an abuser. He was described as a Nazi child rapist who abused them for years. Randy Fowler, 62, and that's Kevin Spacey's last name, Kevin Spacey Fowler, talks about how it was when they were growing up, and that the father was, you know, basically, well, at first they said that everybody knew that Kevin was gay, Kevin Spacey was gay, and but some of the story about the father are so weird. The father's name's Thomas Jeffrey Fowler. He's dead, died at 62. They called him the creature. And so the older kids endured daily beatings, and the sister Julie left home at 18. Now, in 2004 interview, Spacey's brother describes how their ultra-white, right-wing, perverted dad was a member of the American Nazi Party and was so fixated on Adolf Hitler, he even shaved his mustache down to a little square. And Fowler, the brother, said that he was afraid to have kids because he didn't want to inherit the sexual predator gene. And he said that the family grew up living in hell, or he at least he said that he did. And Randy said that, I grew up in a living hell. There was so much darkness in our home, it was beyond belief. It was absolutely miserable. Now, years later, he says our mother actually wrote a letter to all three of us trying to justify what had gone on in the house. Now, then he said about Kevin, which I thought was kind of an interesting background for an actor. He says, Kevin tried to avoid what was going on by wrapping himself in an emotional bubble. He became very sly and smart. He was so determined to try to avoid the whippings that he just minded his P's and Q's until there was nothing inside. He had no feelings. He described his younger brother as an empty vessel who had never been in a real relationship with anyone. And then he says, neither of us had a chance growing up with two such damaged parents. I went through 3 marriages and 40 affairs, he said in 2004. Now, the family had moved 10 times from Colorado, where Randy Fowler was born, to New Jersey. And then Spacey was born there. And the kids were not allowed to bring visitors to the house. And the father was a technical writer, and he plastered the walls of his office with pornographic images. And Randy Fowler was allowed to join the Boy Scouts, but his father made him drop out when he found the scoutmaster was Jewish. At dinner, the children were subjected to their father's lectures about white supremacy and rants about the Holocaust being a lie and that Jews controlled the banks and movie industry, etc., etc. Now, Randy Fowler says his dad began to sexually abuse him when he was 12 and took him to the master bedroom to teach him about the birds and the bees. He unbuttoned his pants and started to play with him, and then he started to scream, and the mother came and pounded on the door, and then the dad made him stay silent. The door was locked, and he just kept it up, and the mom went away. So Kevin Spacey grew up trying to cheer everyone up by doing impersonations of celebrities like Johnny Carson, etc. And Renny Feller said he threatened his father if he ever touched the younger brother, he'd confront the mom with what was going on. So anyway, I think that if you study the lives of a lot of these gay people, public gay, you know, celebrity gays, you'll find that it is quite typical, quite often, that they have been subjected to some abuse and sometimes sexual abuse. And from this story, I'm guessing that the father raped the brother and Kevin Spacey, and they were so traumatized. So I guess that's how Kevin Spacey can get into his roles. Now, Kevin Spacey is worth $80 million, and the question is, will he ever be on screen again? Who will hire him? Now, here is, speaking of pornographic images on walls, here's a weird story, a very bizarre story. And this is from NBCNewYork.com, and I ran across it when I was researching the ISIS attack. 96-year-old retired priest arrested on child pornography charges. 96. He had dozens of photos of girls as young as 8, either posing naked or engaging in sex acts. Now, where was he living? It wasn't just any regular retirement home. It was in the Archdiocese of New York's place called St. John Vianney Center for Retired Priests. And so, can you imagine this? He's in a retirement home full of priests, and he's looking at child porn, and somebody, who knows who it was, of course, went and turned him in. So, they said that he wasn't just looking at it, but he was kind of forcing it on his fellow priests, his fellow retired priests. Now, he faces 4 years in prison, but I can't imagine that they would lock him up for that. I mean, I think at that age, why would they even lock him up? But he was the chancellor of the archdiocese there from 68 to 70, a position meaning that he oversaw the central administrative offices and official documents. So who knows, but he was in the church for 72 years, ordained in 1945, so that's 55, 65, 72 years. 72 years of being a pervert. And his his attorney is saying he is responsible for whatever's on his computer. So if you were thinking he was going to say, like George Bush Sr., he got so old that he forgot what sexual harassment means or child pornography. He didn't say that. All right. Now, here's a person that I know that some of you have some strong feelings about. I myself do, Megyn Kelly. She was at Fox News, and then she dropped out to go to NBC. Now, she has been attacking Bill O'Reilly, saying that, you know, she's trying to get some positive media for herself, saying that she stood up to him and then what he was doing is wrong and everything. But here's the big news on her. Her show, morning show, Megyn Kelly Today, went from 0.77 rating points on last Monday, I love last week, to 0.54. And they say that is the all-time low ever measured for the Today Show in the morning. And they're saying the entire network is in trouble because of her. And they're saying it's a big drop. I mean, obviously, she went from 0.77 down to 0.54. If that happened again, she'd be at 0.25. If that happened again, she wouldn't have any viewers, period. So they asked Matt Lauer about it, and he said, well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, basically, he said he didn't defend her at all. He just said, yeah, it's tough situation. And Matt Lauer and Savannah Guthrie don't go on the show anymore. Now, her lackluster ratings are dragging down Kathy Lee and Hoda. And so that show after hers is down 32% compared to a year ago. And, oh, pardon me, her hour is down 32%, and then the next hour is down 26%. So anyway, it's just kind of amazing, and it seems like anybody who goes after Trump ends up getting destroyed, and I wonder if that's going to be true about Mueller. Because Mueller is, you know, they're saying, and I heard an interesting thing that Rush was saying, is that they couldn't take him down the normal way through the political correct, you know. So they went and did what they had to, something radically new, which was to put this investigation together. So now, some more news for you. ESPN, let's talk about that. Now, here's another example of someone who fights Donald Trump and then ends up getting kicked in the teeth. Now, nobody could say that ESPN wasn't already in trouble as a network because they had been suffering through cord cutting, people getting rid of cable, and then getting their content through the internet as opposed through cable. So they had already lost a certain amount of viewers from that. ESPN has some incredible number of viewers, or did. Now, and this is according to OutKickTheCoverage.com, they're losing 15,000 subscribers a day. Now, the NFL and ESPN they're like Siamese twins. ESPN made it big in the world by becoming the NFL network. For example, they paid $2 billion a year to the NFL for Monday Night Football, and one NFL wildcard playoff game. Now, they're thinking about getting rid of that after 2021, which is when the current contract ends. Now, how much do they pay for it? $1.9 billion. That is a lot of dough. So, what do they get for that? Well, they had a lot of viewers, but since the fight between Trump and the NFL, you wouldn't believe how empty the stadiums are. And each week it seems to get worse and worse. So, in the same way you're losing viewers, people are signing up for ESPN and they're not even watching it because it's part of their bundle. So if ESPN is pulled out of any of these bundles, it makes it even worse. So looking at this article, and it's talking about, and this was already known before, that ESPN had overpaid, had overcontracted, had paid too much for NFL. And I mean, you know, ESPN, which is owned by Disney, is this giant company, and they pay out billions of dollars every year. But, you know, when there's a reversal in the number of people that are watching, 15,000, imagine if 15,000 people moved out of Las Cruces every day. A day. Within how many days? 15, 30, 2, 4, 6, 12. Within 12 days, the city would be empty. I mean, to me, that's a lot of people. So, you've got all these people dropping out of it. Now, what is Disney doing? What is ESPN doing to fight against this? All right, they're entering basically into a kamikaze maneuver because you've already got people that are cutting cords. They're getting rid of cable and they're getting content from the internet. And they're not signing up for ESPN because it's not no longer part of a cable setup. In addition to that, then you start bringing into the network, into your reporting, into all of the stuff in ESPN, leftism. And I'll give you one example. Who was the Sportsman of the Year a couple of years ago? It was Caitlyn Jenner. Now, what percentage of ESPN viewers do you think like that? I'm going to guess, what, 10% maybe? And so, what is the typical sports fan in this country? More or less patriotic, right? You know, if you work at a university, you're probably more liberal and less patriotic. If you are a big sports fan, you're probably more patriotic. So they're taking the group of people that are their core audience and they're saying, we don't care. We want to do the right thing. And to them, the right thing is to push leftism. So they push leftism. And here, so they have Jemele Hill here. And Jemele Hill is this young black female anchor, and she's the one who tweeted that Donald Trump was not just a racist, but he was, you know, the worst kind of racist. And so she got a warning, but nothing happened to her. And then a couple of weeks later, she said, well, you know, if you don't like the decision by Goodell asking people to stand up, go after, you know, for instance, we got a Cowboys game coming up, go after the Cowboys advertisers. So here she is, she's committing an act of war against the people that are helping to pay for ESPN. They only have a couple of sources of revenue, one of which is people who buy the cable service, right? And the other source of revenue is selling ads on the station, on the channel. And she's going after one group. And she's basically saying, you can show your disappointment by how we do it in America. go after the advertisers or don't use the advertisers. So that is a problem for the Cowboys, because the Cowboys also have advertising revenue. But the Cowboys don't want to be put in the spot of being forced over a barrel over whether people are going to support free speech, supposedly, or they're going to support the rights of the owners to make money and keep their business model going, or the rights of the players to say that they don't like how things are done. So it's a total disaster. It was accomplished through idiots like Roger Goodell, who didn't take it seriously. He wasn't patriotic enough. Think about it. He's watching the game, San Francisco. To him, it's a business. You know, it's you don't watch the games for pleasure. You go there to monitor. It's going on in San Francisco. The guy kneels for the anthem. He can't see far enough in the future, which is a disaster for a leader, to know that this could, in the future, think about this. I mean, really think about this. It's kind of fascinating. One mistake, and he doesn't consider how in the future this could blow up in his face. So he doesn't do anything about it, and people are upset, and they let him go. They let Kaepernick kneel, and then more players get involved. And it kind of rides along, and maybe it would have died out. Kaepernick's no longer in the league. And then Donald Trump says, this is garbage, and how about if these owners said, you know what? You don't want to stand during this anthem? I want you to get out of here, USOB. Get off of my team. Get off of my field. You're fired. And that's when it went haywire. But the league made another mistake, thinking that the American populace, the American public, would care more about the protest than they would about the flag. Huge mistake. So now it's playing out every week. Every week the audiences are getting smaller. And the fact of the matter is something that Roger Goodell hasn't thought about. And in the meantime, Jerry Jones is trying to get him fired for a couple of reasons. I'll get into that in a minute. But Roger Goodell is, maybe he's like a lot of people who gets into a position where he's so powerful and he has so many people kissing his butt, important people, important athletes kiss his butt, billionaire owners kiss his butt, TV executives, et cetera, et cetera, that he didn't look into the future and say, this poses an existential threat. But, I mean, it is fascinating. The entire league could collapse into something that it hasn't been for decades. It could become irrelevant between the head injuries and the anthem and the greed of the owners and the dissatisfaction of the players. And I'm going to predict, and all the injuries that, you know, head injuries, I'm going to predict that the NFL will fall from being the preeminent sports league in the nation, and it'll be taken over by basketball or baseball, which are both much more safe and enjoyable games in terms of health than football. So keep, you know, just watch. But Trump entered into the debate, and something in his instinct said, I'm going to go after these guys to prove a point. And what's going to happen is that they're going to come out on the losing end, and they are coming out on the losing end. And it's fascinating to watch something so powerful suddenly get sick over the last couple of years. Now, one more story for you. Just have a few minutes left here, but the story is, and by the way, if you want to email me, and I'm just trying to get the show running again, you can tell people that the show's on every day, and I am pre-recording it for a little while, and I've ordered more equipment so I can bring in news clips, and I think tomorrow I'm going to play the piano for the opening and the closing. Maybe I'll do a little Fred Rogers, you know, Mr. Rogers. I can play a little mood music to kind of heighten the drama. But There's an article here from, oh, and the address, by the way, the email address, kelly.o'connell@gmx.com for email. More students, here's an article from the collegefix.com. More students, young Americans, turn to paganism October 31st, 2017. So, what are some of the takeaway points from this? All right, one of which is that 25%, a recent study from Pew Research found that 25% of Americans now identify with no religion, as opposed to 18% in 2011. That is a shocking increase. That's kind of in the realm of ESPN's losses. So you've got 7%, but it's gone from 18% up to a quarter. A quarter of Americans have no religion. Now listen to this. UPI is reporting a 2014 National Science Foundation poll found nearly half of all Americans say astrology is either very scientific or sort of scientific. Isn't that amazing? I've got a number of books, I say a number, three or four books on the subject of magic and science, because in the history of mankind, and as science was developing, it was associated with, or it kind of grew up with science before it broke off. So now maybe it's rejoining it. All right, so a number of these people that don't have a religion are stepping into paganism. In 2010, Syracuse University appointed its first pagan chaplain for Hendricks Hall, a place of worship. The Air Force followed that. 2014, Loyola University of Chicago, a Catholic school, opened a new pagan club. University of Washington launched a column dedicated to Wiccanism, and that's what a lot of this is Wiccanism, which is... Wiccanism is a modern recreation of ancient paganism. So, and a lot, some of it is based on, as a matter of fact, Irish, Celtic ideas, and some other sources. And so, here's my question. Maybe the elephant in the room in this one. 900-pound gorilla. Why are people getting into paganism? They're walking there, don't believe in the Bible. Do they believe in a God? You know, paganism is not something that has a God in it. It has gods, maybe. But you can worship the earth like a god. But I'll give you a little example of the difference between Christianity and paganism in Rome. Paganism, Roman paganism, and difference between that and Christianity or Judaism. Roman paganism was not based on faith. There was no personal connection to God. There was, instead, a family of gods. You know, there was Zeus, Hera, Neptune, Diana, all these different gods. It was like a family. There was no head god like the Christian God. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't have understood that concept. It was so far beyond what they were doing. And the relationship they had was contractual. It was not personal. It was not, they were opposed to faith. The idea that they just believed in it and it would happen. You know, you pray for something. So in ancient Rome, if they wanted something, or if there was a crisis or they wanted something, they would do rituals with their various colleges, pagan colleges. And so maybe the Arville Brethren or the Vestal Virgins, you know. And so it was nothing like, it was totally, completely different than what we understand as a religion. Now they interviewed a guy, and I would say that same spirit goes on today. They interviewed one young man, the vice president of the Pagan Student Union at the University of Baltimore, why he liked paganism. He says, I think one of the things that really helped solidify for me that paganism was the path for me was the almost complete freedom I had. He said, there is no one holy text we all must read. There is no organized church service which is mandatory to attend. There is no concept of original sin or any pressure to be perfect people. Paganism is exactly what you want it to be. Which is interesting, you know? And, you know, there's a lot of these people that like that out there. Now, Catherine Edward Sanders wrote a book in 2005, Wicca's Charm, Understanding the Spiritual Hunger Behind the Rise of Modern Witchcraft and Pagan Spirituality. She describes or defines Wicca as monistic and pantheistic beliefs that all living things are of equal value. Humans have no special place, nor are they made in God's image. Wiccans believe they possess divine power within themselves and that they are gods and goddesses. Consciousness can and should be altered through rite and ritual. And then Sanders also writes, most Wiccans don't believe in Satan, but they do believe evil exists. And she finishes by saying, Wiccans, as a rule, are not consciously or deliberately worshiping Satan. Whether they are unconsciously worshiping him is an issue on which Wiccans will differ with Christians. That's pretty fascinating, huh? So, I guess we're going to see more of this. Does that mean the end is here? All right, so what do you think the state of Christianity is or religion is in America? And what needs to be changed? Do you think it's Christianity has been, or religion has been a positive, has had a positive impact on America or a negative impact? Do you believe religion has brought the worst out in humans or the best, or is it a mixed bag? And how should we deal with people who want to be pagans, who demand their space? Should those people be resisted, or should they just be immediately given room? Now I'm looking through a few more stories here to bring to you. And a guy who's collecting signatures, Tom Steyer, billionaire, to impeach Trump, has got 1 million signatures. Now, remember the nurse they tried to force her to give a blood sample, and she said, I can't do that without permission and all that. She was arrested. And she was crying and yelling, you know, she had rights and everything. You know how much she was paid for that? $500,000. Yeah, and here's the article. Utah nurse reaches $500,000, $500,000 settlement in dispute over her arrest for blocking cop from drawing blood from patient. Amazing. It's important to stand up. If she hadn't stood up, she'd be $500,000 poorer. Looking for any other stories here, my friends. Well, I hope that you survived your Halloween. Speaking of Wiccanism, and this is a very sacred day, the history of Halloween. Let me just get you a little bit from history.com. It was All Hallows Eve. That's where the name came from, and it was supposed to be the night that the ghosts were let loose. It's age-old European tradition. It was the Celtic festival of Samhain. People would light bonfires and wear costumes to ward off ghosts. Then in the 8th century, Pope Gregory III turned November 1st into All Saints' Day. And so all Halloween becomes All Hallows Eve. And I assume that the reason that the designs of the outfits, the mask and everything, were to scare off the dead. Now, in ancient Ireland, or the ancient Celts actually lived in Ireland and France and England and Wales and such. They marked the end of summer and the harvest and beginning of the dark cold was Samhain. Or how they pronounced it is Samhain. Now the Celts believed that the winter brought the time, symbolized human death. Celts believed that on the night before the new year, the boundary between the worlds of the living and the dead became blurred. On the night of October 31st, they celebrated Samhain, and it believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to the earth at that point, and in addition to causing trouble and damaging crops, Celts believed the presence of otherworldly spirits made it easier for the Druids or Celtic priests to make predictions about the future. For a people entirely dependent on these things, it was very important. And so anyway, that was one of the preoccupations of the ancients, was because they, unlike us, didn't have the ability to control a great deal of their lives. They had to fit into nature, and they were constantly trying to figure out what was going to happen in the future. And then the high point of the Celtic Empire was destroyed when they fought against Caesar, and he killed more than 1 million Celts in his Gallic Wars, which is another topic we can pick up another day. But anyway, great to hang out with you, and this show is going to continue to get better. Now that I don't have the studio, I have to figure out how to get people. How I get the stuff that I used to do in the studio, the news clips and the music and everything in, which I should have by next week. I'll have the piano to play, which is out in the garage right now. And there's also the issue of clips and everything. And then I'm going to get some advertisers on here. I just need to spread the word around that I'm back on the air. So if you want to let people know, the number to call in, 805-6180. I still have that phone. If you want to call, text me. And then my email, kelly.o'connell@gmx.com. So anyway, I hope you didn't eat too much candy. Hope you're having a good day, and we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Have a great night. Kelly O'Connell Show. Wonderful to spend a little bit of time with you. Take care. Ciao.